As I interviewed my father for this book, he would explain more than once to me. He told me, from the day I left in 1970, I knew I was going to return. It was against all odds, and at the time, nobody would believe me, but I knew that one day I was coming back. To the extent that before he left, he took my grandfather aside and he told him, don't sell the land. I need a piece to build the house on when I return. And he was actually outside for 26 years. And this was our story. And so, you know, it's so, the story itself is so out of the ordinary. So, you know, so much of it is almost like, you know, you really don't know how fate kind of intervened and put all of this together. And that's really one of the essential reasons I wrote my book.
Welcome to This is Palestine. I'm Deanna Butu. How does it feel to return to Palestine following decades of exile? What's it like to return to a place that one has heard so much about, but that in reality bears no resemblance to the stories due to decades of colonization? How does one fit in after a lifetime of being away? These are only a few of the questions that Fida Jirias attempts to answer in her new book, Stranger in My Own Land. Fida is a writer and editor from Fasuta in the Upper Galilee, but currently resides in Ramallah. In order to answer some of these questions, Fida takes us on her very own and very unique and tragic family journey. As Fida and her family were one of the few Palestinian families able to return to historic Palestine following the signing of the Oslo Accords in 1993. The book is part biographical and part autobiographical and begins with her father, her grandparents, and great-grandparents witnessing the Nakba and escaping Israel's ethnic cleansing wrath. Her father, Sabri Jirias, was 10 years old at the time, living in the northern Palestinian village of Fasuta.
My father told me that one of his earliest memories of the Nakba was he was on donkey back, on his father's donkey, and he had gone to the village. And he said, I simply trotted along the village streets. Everything was empty. The windows were just, you know, they were creaking in the wind. Obviously, the orchards or the gardens outside the houses were just left untended. The grass was starting to grow. And he said, I have never seen a more depressing sight. He said that as he was walking along, he found one single chicken. They had even taken the chickens. They took everything with them when they left. So he said, you know, as a child, it was, I mean, this was a village that, you know, he had gone to often with his father. He had no idea what had just happened. When he went back to the village, he went to his grandfather's house, and that was the second shocking scene that he described to me of seeing people from Tarshiha. Many, many, many people assembled at his grandfather's house, and his grandmother was feeding all these people. He had no idea who they were. And he said, that was my first experience. I saw the Nakba with my own eyes. My grandfather later explained to me that these people had run away and that they had stopped. He had brought them to the house to give them a little food before they continued north into Lebanon.
These experiences left an indelible impression on Sabri and on his parents and grandparents, marking the beginning of what would soon become Sabri's lifelong work on Palestine. Sabri, like the remaining 150,000 Palestinians who did not flee during the Nakba, were, overnight, turned into an unwanted minority in their own land, subjected to Israeli military rule, and at the same time trying to cope with the loss of their land, the loss of their communities, the loss of their neighbors, and the loss of their family. Sabri is later educated in Nazareth and, after that, the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, where he studied law. He was one of a handful of Palestinian students at the university at the time. Upon becoming a lawyer, Sabri becomes a well-known land lawyer trying to challenge Israel's land theft. But instead of success, Sabri and his friends began to feel the full effects of Israel's military rule and the need to obtain permits from the Israeli authorities, the stitching of laws to justify Israel's land theft, and the various methods that are used to stifle Palestinian attempts to organize against Israeli action.
As a child, he began to ask a lot of questions. He was one of the luckier children in that my grandfather was well off. He was able to send him to boarding school in Nazareth. From there, my father became very politically aware at a young age because he would ask his day school friends to bring him newspapers from outside. He was in boarding school. And he said, you know, at the time it was, you know, Nasserism was beginning and so on. So there was a lot of stuff, a lot of things going on in the Arab world, and they caught on to that wave. From there, he went to the Hebrew University. He studied law. And then he worked with Hanna Nakara, who was known as the land lawyer. He's a prominent Palestinian lawyer in Haifa. Most of my father's work, together with the late Hanna, was in defending the rights of Palestinians whose lands had been taken away, had been expropriated or seized by Israel during the Nakba. At the same time, during his university years and even beyond, he became one of the leaders of Al-Ard, which was the first Palestinian political movement to emerge after the Nakba. As a result of both of these things, he was hassled and often placed in detention, you know, under military rule and even beyond. And finally, he was forced into exile. He went with my late mother to Beirut.
Because of his work, Sabri and his friends were often banished from their towns and instead forced to reside in different locales, oftentimes Israeli-only towns. They were forced to check in daily to the various police stations, and Israel scrupulously monitored their every move in an attempt to block them from organizing. Seeing the futility of using the Israeli system to challenge Israeli action, Sabri and his brother Jirias joined the PLO. It's during this period that Sabri weds his wife, Henni, who's also from Fasuta, and together they make the decision to leave Palestine due to their constant harassment and persecution in Israel. They eventually end up in Beirut. It is here that Fida is born, followed by her younger brother, and where the family begin to live in exile, a few hundred kilometers from their hometown in Fasuta. Sabri is the author of the first English language authoritative book on Israeli military law titled The Arabs in Israel. And when landing in Beirut, he puts his sights on establishing and maintaining a research center. It is this center that serves as a publication house for many important works, including Shu'un Falastiniyye and others. And it's also during this period that Fida, as a small child, experiences the Lebanese Civil War, Israel's invasion of Lebanon, and witnesses the departure of the PLO from Beirut. It is also when Jirias and her family face another enormous tragedy when her mother is killed in an attack on the research center where she too had worked.
Eventually, there was the Israeli invasion. In 1982, the Sabra and Shatila massacres. We were not living in the camps, so we did not encounter these firsthand. A few months later, in 1983, a bomb was planted outside the Palestine Research Center, killing several employees, including my mother. My grandparents were very, very strong people, but they became sick. All three of them became very sick because of all of this. And the one thing I remain very glad about, as I did the interviews for the book and in our story, is that they were all alive to see my parents return. The one heartbreaking fact, of course, was that my mother had already gone when we returned. And so my grandmother, my mother's mother, got to see us, you know, her children returning. And I remember the day we walked down the steps into her little house. We had met her before she had come to Cyprus. But she just broke down and she said, Hanni is back. And everyone began to cry, including us. I mean, it was a very, very difficult, you know, it was a very difficult moment because in Beirut, my mother had sent her a letter in 1982, just a few months before my mother was killed. And in the letter she had written, please, Mom, I want you to sort out your passport and I will arrange for everything. I need to see you. It's been 12 years, and I feel that if I don't see you now, we may never see each other again. And they never did.
From there, the family makes its way to Cyprus, and with the signing of the Oslo Accords, they finally return. Fida is 22 years old when she returns, having never visited her homeland. Owing to the fact that her father held Israeli citizenship before exile, She's able to obtain Israeli citizenship and reside in historic Palestine. Her return home was an emotional one. For the next few years, Fida struggles with adapting to her homeland and witnessing how much Israel has effectively erased Palestinians. Daily, she encounters racism in her interactions with Israelis and is left wondering and questioning the coping mechanisms that are used by Palestinians with Israeli citizenship, who make up about 20% of the population.
The title of the book really describes my experience here on both sides. Obviously, inside Israel, I am one of the unwanted minority of Palestinians, oppressed and discriminated against in so many ways. It's actually quite amazing to think that people can sit down and weave. I've always reflected on this. Weave such an intricate web of discriminatory laws and practices to suppress and subdue another people. And in my life in the West Bank, it's the other side of the same coin, albeit it's more blatant, it's more in your face. In other words, the military rule or the oppression, the direct or outright military oppression that existed after 1948 inside the territories occupied then was somehow moved to the West Bank and to Gaza. So really I feel out of place in both places. I feel, at the same time, I feel very much a part of my people who are struggling on both these sides. And I've always felt that maybe it's a privilege and maybe in some ways it's not really a blessing, I would say, to be able to look on the situation very often from outside, almost as though I'm viewing it from a lens that's outside. I'm able to kind of project outwards and look at it. And when I look at it, so often, like so many other Palestinians, friends that I know and other Palestinians here, it's really amazing at how much we put up with just to be able to navigate our lives through this web of oppression that's around us in every single day, in every single thing we try to do, from the smallest life decisions to the biggest, from your most mundane trip that you have to plan around the checkpoints and the harassment and the hassle and whatever is happening that day, and you know, to decisions like, where am I going to work? What kind of discrimination will I face? My experience of working inside Israel was awful. It was full of discrimination and contempt, and I did not want to be treated as a non-human being. And that's one of many reasons that eventually made me leave. So really, you know, it's remarkable to say this, but I've been back now for 26 years and I'm still very much a stranger in my own land.
The book is clearly the result of years of work, and Fida's efforts to capture her father's story is commendable and I hope will be replicated by others. To be clear, though, this book, while uniquely telling the story of her family and of her family's experiences, these experiences can easily be translated to virtually all Palestinians living around the world, whether in historic Palestine or in the diaspora. Israel's colonial rule has disfigured our country, our language, our culture, and our region. And Israel has attempted to make all Palestinians feel as though we are strangers, even in our own land. Thank you for listening to This is Palestine, a podcast brought to you by the Institute for Middle East Understanding. The IMEU is a nonprofit focused on giving you access to untold stories, facts, and expert sources on all things Palestine. For more information, please visit our website at www.imeu.org and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at the IMEU. Please don't forget to subscribe. I'm Deanna Butu. Thanks for listening.